Okay, so look, this question really comes down to, are you going to give her a statin or are you going to give her a fibrate? Okay? And I'll just come out right away because there's a lot we can discuss. Like we could literally have an hour lecture just on these drugs, okay? But I'll just come out and say that it's gamfibrozil that we're going to give her because the indication is triglycerides above 500, all right? Now, you can have elevated triglycerides and say, oh, well, like, why wouldn't we give her a fibrate? I don't understand. It's because fibrates are not proven to decrease mortality the way that statins are. Okay, statins are the drug that have notably been demonstrated to decrease mortality, and that's because they have an antioxidant effect on endothelial cells that transcends the lipid-lowering effect. Okay, so lots of these drugs help the lipids, but for one reason or another, it's the statin that's known to decrease mortality. So even if we have high triglycerides, we're not going to add the fibrate to the statin unless the triglycerides are above 500. And in addition, the main reason is when you combine fibrates with statins, that increases the risk of myopathy. One of the questions on it's an older step one NBME. Actually, no, it's not an older one. I believe it is in the NBME is in the 20s now, so it's 20 through 24. It's on one of those exams. But they just ask straight up why you get myositis when you combine statins with fibrates, and it's because of the P450 inhibition by fibrates. Okay, so that's the mechanism. So, as I said, a lot we can break down here. What you need to know, just targeted for the exam, is for step one, atorvastatin inhibits HMG-CoA reductase, a rate-limiting enzyme for cholesterol synthesis. It's competitive and reversible, that inhibition. And that is going to result in an increase in LDL receptor expression on hepatocytes. Okay? So if you're decreasing cholesterol synthesis in the liver, that's going to require the liver to pull cholesterol out of the blood to compensate for that. So sometimes you'll give a patient a statin and the question will ask like what the mechanism is, and the answer, you're looking for HMG-CoA reductase inhibition, but it's not there, and you're like, wait, what the fuck? But the answer will just be increased expression of LDL receptor. Okay, so both are acceptable answers, just the latter is indirect, whereas the enzyme inhibition is direct. And there's another NBME question floating around where patients given a statin, and you need to know that there's increased HMG-CoA reductase mRNA synthesis, which makes sense because if you're inhibiting the enzyme, then you're going to upregulate transcription of the gene, translation of the RNA to compensate. Now, when we move into more step two type discussion, like the family medicine side of things, it should be noted that the guidelines for when a statin is advised slash recommended, these guidelines tend to shift depending on the source, and they've even just changed recently. But I can tell you safely that if the patient has a cholesterol, an LDL cholesterol greater than 190 and is age 21 to 75, that a statin is certainly recommended. Okay, so that is the like baseline absolute indication for a statin. Now things are broken down a little bit more in that patients who are 40 to 75 who have an LDL greater than 70 should also commence a statin. And if the patient is a diabetic, age 21 to 39, and has an LDL cholesterol greater than 100, should commence a statin, okay? And depending on the other risk factors the patient has, such as family history, smoking, these types of things, it's the intensity and the dosage of the statin that changes, not whether the patient actually requires the statin. So I know that that can sound very confusing, a lot of information there, a lot to discuss, but the bottom line is a patient 21 to 75, LDL greater than 190, statin, okay? Patient 40 to 75, LDL greater than 70, statin. And diabetic 21 to 39, greater than 100, statin. Once again, that's more family medicine step two stuff, but you should just be aware of that. Now, in terms of HDL value, I should note that men tend to have HDL averaging in the 40s. Women tend to have HDL averaging in the 50s. It's generally accepted that an HDL greater than 60 is protective, whereas an HDL less than 40 is a cardiovascular risk factor. So sometimes USMLE questions will give the HDL in the 30s when they're trying to they're trying to give an indication of a patient who has overall poor health. Like they might give you a vignette where the patient's a smoker, sedentary lifestyle, etc., has an HDL in the 30s. And the number one way to increase someone's HDL via lifestyle modification is smoking cessation. That's also important. Now, cholesevelam, it's a bile acid sequestrant. Okay, there's cholestipol, cholesevelam, cholestyramine. Now, bile acids, they are they're in the small bowel, and they're ordinarily returned to the liver via enterohepatic circulation at the terminal ileum. Now, starting point for this. In the liver, cholesterol is converted into bile acids via an enzyme called 7-alpha hydroxylase. Now, if you give a bile acid sequestrant to a patient, and what that means is it binds to the bile acids in the small bowel lumen, prevents the return via enterohepatic circulation. So that means that the liver is like, oh shit, like we're deficient in bile acids. We've got to produce more. And the way it does that is by converting more cholesterol into bile acids, okay, to compensate. And if it's converting more cholesterol into bile acids, it's also going to have to pull more cholesterol out of the blood as an additional compensation. So that's how bile acid sequestrants lower cholesterol. That's an important mechanism for step one to be aware of that. But yeah, no specific indication. Okay. Like they, like we talk about once again, the mortality benefit, it really revolves around statins. Now, evolocumab, this is a newer drug. It's called a pro-protein convertase subtilisin cexin type 9 inhibitor. That is a huge fucking mouthful, I know. Now, these drugs, newer as in the past decade, and still lots of longitudinal studies revolving around the use of these. Now, PCSK9 inhibitors, their PCSK9 is an enzyme that breaks down LDL receptor, okay? We want LDL receptor on the liver to pull cholesterol out of the blood. Now, if we break down that receptor via PCSK9 physiologically with homeostasis, then that will function to prevent cholesterol from leaving the blood. So if we inhibit PCSK9 via evolocumab, then there's no mechanism to break down that LDL receptor. So we've got a lot of expression, just ongoing expression of that LDL receptor on the cell membrane, and we can pull a lot of LDL out of the blood. So the evolocumab, these agents, these PCSK9 inhibitors, they're known to decrease LDL so substantially, like even down to 20, 30 milligrams per deciliter, that this might actually be harmful to the patient long term. So studies still need to yield additional research as far as their use. Like in the next generation, will these be preferred over statins, right? But it's fair game. You should be aware of PCSK9 inhibitors as a newer generation agent. Ezetimibe, directly, this is an important one for step one. They love asking the mechanism here. It directly binds to cholesterol in the small bowel and prevents its absorption through the enterocyte. Okay, that's literally just the mechanism, just prevents its absorption straight up. That's it. And does not decrease mortality. Okay. Now, fibrates such as gemfibrozil, fenofibrate, these agents are going to upregulate PPAR alpha, which will in turn upregulate lipoprotein lipase. This is an enzyme that is going to enable the movement of triglycerides from the blood into the adipocyte. So that will decrease triglycerides in the blood. Lipoprotein lipase will break down triglycerides into three fatty acids and a monoacylglycerol. When they're in this broken down form, they are able to transcytose the adipocyte membrane. So bottom line, be aware of the mechanism of action of fibrates. Once again, they're used when triglycerides greater than 500 milligrams per deciliter and cause myopathy in conjunction with statins. I should also note that statins and fibrates both cause hepatotoxicity. That's another important point to note. If you start a statin or a fibrate and your hepatic enzymes elevate slightly and the U.S. Smiley question asks you, like, what should you do? Like, you're like, oh, like, you know, we should decrease the dose, or we should, the answer is you just keep the dose the same, okay? Mild transaminitis is normal and expected for hepatotoxic agents, like any hepatotoxic agent, like lithium, any of the TB drugs, okay? You can expect a small increase in hepatic enzymes. So niacin, USMLE, a lot to talk about niacin, B3, but just to make things concise enough, USMLE wants you to know that this agent increases HDL more than any other agent. Okay, so even more than lifestyle modification alone, just niacin is the most effective way to increase HDL, but we do not actively prescribe niacin. Very, very, very rare to do that. And that's because niacin has three nasty side effects, okay? So the first one is going to be flushing, okay? Very common with niacin use. So red skin, rash, okay? And the USMLE wants you to know this is mediated by prostaglandins, not histamine. Histamine is the number one wrong answer. Now, the reason you can infer that it's mediated by prostaglandins is because aspirin is the treatment for the rash. Or you can give some aspirin even prophylactically with niacin to prevent the rash. And aspirin's going to inhibit COX, decrease prostaglandin synthesis. So the two are linked, all right? Not histamine mediated. Niacin also causes dysglycemia, okay? So patients who are pre-diabetic, it can push them into diabetes. Patients who are diabetic, makes their glycemic levels worse. So it requires increased dosing of the diabetic meds. And niacin also can cause gout. So I've had a student have that question on the USMLE, basically give you a vignette with all these cardiovascular risk factors and history. And tell you the patient has a history of gout and which drug is contraindicated. Answer is niacin. Okay, so niacin can cause hyperuricemia. Those are the side effects of niacin. Niacin deficiency. I don't want to derail us too much from the actual lipid discussion. But pellagra, niacin deficiency, is just dementia, dermatitis, diarrhea. Should be noted that if they give you niacin deficiency in a USMLE question, they might even give you a presentation that sounds like delirium. And you're like, oh, I thought like niacin caused dementia, not like, why are they giving me delirium? It's because underlying dementia is the biggest risk factor for delirium. Or I should say one of the biggest risk factors for delirium, okay? Decreased mental reserve. So they'll give you a patient who might have niacin deficiency, who's got some visual hallucinations and increased bowel motions and has hyperpigmentation of the forearms. Casal necklace, which is photosensitivity around the neck, that's a classic textbook type rash that's been described with pellagra, but USMLE will happily give you hyperpigmentation of the forearms. Orlistat, that is a pancreatic lipase inhibitor, so that would in turn cause decreased ability to absorb fats through the small bowel wall. That would be more of a distractor than anything else, which it clearly is. I've never seen that as an answer, but you could just be aware of the mechanism that it could also cause steatorrhea in theory, just because you're decreasing the absorption of fats. That's it.